Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up. And have we got a show for you tonight? Hamas wins again. Thanks to Joe Biden and Democrat Party, the future will have more American killers with the ceasefire and the release of Palestinians. Then we're going to talk about Dementia Joe's oligarch warning, the pot calling the kettle black. We're going to talk about, well, we're not going to talk about a dozen billionaire Democrat donors, but there are at least a dozen that I came up with on a quick search. So we're going to talk about the more famous ones, the Soros types. Then we're going to go local and talk a little California and Gavin Newsom heroically exploding wildfires to boost Democrat coffers with AdBlue. And finally, Democrats take a bold stand against protecting women in favor of illegal aliens and rape and crimes with H.R. 30. And finally, we're going to close it out with our, it's becoming famous, people, I'm telling you, our fired up hot takes, which is a quick lightning round where I guess this lightning round is like in slow motion, but we're getting better. And with that, let's introduce our panel tonight. We have the beautiful Miss Annette Ross, and we have GOP strategist Jamie Miller with us. Annette, tell us real quick about your book, We Love Pumping.
The title of the book is Where Fairy Tales Go. It's a memoir, and you can find it on Amazon.
And Annette has, you have another book coming out soon, don't you?
Yes, I do. I will save it for when I have my title ready.
Oh, it's in the early stages, you know. And then we have GOP strategist Jamie Miller. And every time I think of Jamie, I always think of Barbara Doe. And when he told me that she was going to be a guest on his New Year's Eve show. And I'm thinking, oh, dear God, poor Barbara. She better get on at the 5 o'clock hour at her age. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing great. I thought Annette had some breaking news for us, but we have to wait on the title. I can't wait.
Yeah, you gotta. Oh, thank you. Thank you for that, Jamie. I love your book. I love Jamie's book. Everybody should get a copy. So excellent. And you know what I noticed, Jamie? How the writing has changed over the years.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
You know what I'm saying? Like over the years, how people wrote is very interesting to think about that. Yeah, I loved it.
All right. Jamie, what's the title of that book, and where can people find it real quick now that Annette mentioned it?
Thanks, Annette. American Speeches That Changed History on Amazon.
Well, we're going to have one here this coming Monday, aren't we, with the inauguration. So I'd like to say good days are coming, but we'll see. You know, will he be a lame duck before he starts? It doesn't seem like it, but we will see. But that's a topic for next week. Let's get into this right away. So, to the audience, you know, we have a never-ending cycle of peace deals in the Middle East, and it always ends up with the release of Palestinian prisoners who have killed Jews and Americans over and over. And it's like a broken record, and the U.S. and Biden, and I have to sit there and say, Trump hasn't proposed that he's 100% for this deal, but he's not knocking it, and I'm kind of tired of seeing Palestinian prisoners who have track records of success in terms of killing individuals being released as part of the ceasefire agreement. It was just brokered. It was, I don't want to say finalized today, but I think both sides came to the conclusion the deal is going to happen. And it's just in time for the Trump administration to come in. He wanted this deal in place or some form or fashion before he took office. So, an overview of it is, as of January 16, 2025, a ceasefire agreement between Israel and Hamas was announced, and it's aimed, obviously, at ending the conflict that has lasted over 15 months. This deal was brokered by the United States. Qatar, is that how you say it? Qatar? Is it Qatar or Qatar?
Qatar, I think.
I'll take your word for it.
There you go. And Egypt. And it includes provisions for the hostage release and the cessation of hostilities and increased humanitarian aid. And that's my issue again, too, is the humanitarian aid, that a big chunk of it never winds up going to the right people. And the financial part of it always ends up rebuilding tunnels and converting equipment into weapons. Some reports suggest that the attacks have continued and they are casting doubt on the ceasefire stability. Real quick, Jamie, your thoughts on the ceasefire when you first heard it happened?
Well, I'll give a little bit of a thing. a little bit of a teaser. I do have some big predictions for how Trump's going to handle the fires in California when we get to that. So you guys are going to want to hang in there and watch this. It's going to be an exciting episode with a lot of, I think great predictions. But, you know, when it comes to this ceasefire, you know, always stopping a war is better than continuing one, I guess. You know, in this case, it seems like we're trading 33 hostages for 250 terrorists. And, you know, like you said, that those aren't great odds. And, you know, it's I guess the devil's in the details. I think that Donald Trump has kind of either endorsed the deal, or it seems like there's a little bit of backroom politics going on with the Israel cabinet that is, you know, kind of said, hey, we're going to wait to finalize the deal, a lot like, you know, Carter Reagan in 1981, January of 81 with Iran hostages. So yeah. we'll see if they're released this weekend or if they wait until next week. And not that, you know, if they're released, it's good. We'd always rather have our hostages home. And people who are non-combatants, this has been a horrible situation. But like you, William, I don't know that it solves the underlying issue.
Your thoughts, Ms. Annette, there when you heard about the ceasefire?
Well, I did some research on this and listened to some people that I really respect on this matter. And really, it's not as grim as I think you're painting the picture. I mean, Hamas did not achieve all of its goals. I think they went to the table with 5 goals. I mean, the IDF is still going to be in the Gaza Strip. It's going to be like a slow sort of migration back to the people coming back into the area. I do think the 33 hostages, that's not everybody. Supposedly it's like the women and the children and people who might be wounded. They're going to keep some soldiers, but it's a start. And I think this is the best deal they're going to get. That's the thing. I think that if this doesn't go the way it's sort of set up to start, that it's going to be a far worse, you know what I mean, situation. There's going to be far less. And I think that Trump will say, go ahead, Israel, we're going to stand back, let you do what you need to do, and we're going to support you in doing it.
Right. You know, the problem I have with that analysis from those individuals, because I read some of those, is this is the same story. It's a repeat story. And that there's not been one instance where prisoners have been released and they have not caught some of them again down the road. And, you know, I think the only saving grace here is Trump. You know, he put the fear of God into the Taliban. Until Biden took office, they didn't do anything in Afghanistan. You know, I think that picture of the Taliban leaders' homes that he showed them when they were actually meeting and said, you do, if one American dies, so do you. That kind of went a long way. And I think, and that's what you're saying, he's going to back Israel. My take is simple. Everybody forgets October 7th. They just completely forget, ignore that, act as if it doesn't exist, or, hey, it's okay that they died, but we got to protect those kids. To me, just take them all out. It's like, you know, but they're like roaches. You can't, you know, but this deal, I think, is just going to, all it's going to do is prolong another incident a few years from now. One thing I wanted to talk about here, too, is so when I was doing my research and then I heard that that the ceasefire wasn't set yet, that one side had attacked another, I did some research into Reuters, NPR, and Al Jazeera. That were reporting that they didn't know who lobbed the first fire after the ceasefire had been announced. And I'm thinking, Israel has never had a history of attacking first. They've always been provoked. And Reuters, yes, Reuters, NPR, and Al Jazeera. And so then I dug into Reuters, NPR, and Al Jazeera, and they're very biased in their reporting, you know? So I'm like, you know, it's like I can't even take what they're saying here with any validity. And it's not a big deal, but it just bugs me because these are the small nuances that gives Hamas more power. Well, we don't know which side started the attack here once the ceasefire. Because if they sit there and say who really started the firing, Hamas, in my opinion, you know, they wouldn't be garnering the sympathy. How much, Jamie, of this whole process, and not just this cycle, but every cycle, is the media refusing to show these Palestinian terrorist groups for who and what they really are, and always playing to their side. How much does that create a more pro concessions for these Palestinian terrorist groups?
You know, the last 4 years we've seen this with the weaponization of our federal agencies and with the mainstream media, corporate media, which is why programs like yours are so important to the future, I think, of our country, and getting messages out to people from real people who are willing to dig into multiple media sources that are not necessarily, you know, the corporate media that the vast majority of people see. So, you know, it's one thing that surprised me about hostages, and just to reinforce one of Annette's points, is the age. The ages of these hostages are from 1 until up to 82 years old. You know, so the, you know, and while you know, she mentioned some of the soldiers staying, these are civilian. These are civilians who don't deserve this in any way, shape, or form. These are war crimes being committed, and I agree with what I think Donald Trump is going to do, which is what you suggest, is let Israel handle their sovereignty their way.
Right. So, Annette, you've had dealings locally with the media. You've seen how bad it can be. And I always view, you know, I always tell people, it doesn't matter what point you are in your life, the issues affecting you and stressing you are the worst things at that moment in time, and everything's relative. So you've dealt with the media. It's the same thing, I believe, here. It's just obviously on a different scale. Jamie brought up a very good point, though. If the roles had been reversed here, and any allied nation, not just Israel, but the U.S., had hostages ranging from babies to elderly, that'd be nonstop. But yet, again, they have forgotten October 7th, and these hostages that are civilians. Instead, all we hear about is Israel's killing civilians in Gaza. Well, what about these hostages? You know, and that kind of bothers me with the media. Your take on the media and their coverage of this?
Well, I mean, for a while, I would watch Al Jazeera, and then I realized that everything that they were saying was it was literal lies. I mean, I could literally have disproved to them time and again. And then I was like, wow, how is this allowed to even exist? You're right. I mean, they're doing a good job at taking away, at making the other side seem victimized. But I want to say something about that I think you'll find interesting to your point about what's happening. No, it's really important because it's about education. For example, one of the books we have in our school that is reading for the entire middle school. So I'm reading it with my daughter to see what it's about. And it's about Pakistan people and how America burned down mosques. And it's this whole story, this whole narrative that I was like, wait a minute. Everything they're saying, I feel like my experience in life and what I've learned is the opposite is true. Do you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, Georgia, this book. And she's like, you don't like the book? And I said, well, honey, I think it's a very one-sided depiction about what is happening with, like, it talks about Palestine. It talks about, it doesn't talk about anti-Semitism. It actually flips everything on its head. I was actually in shock about how these people are in fear of Americans and Israelis. I was like, wait a minute, I'm totally confused by this. I'm totally confused by this book is what I'm saying to you. And I was so upset. And I'm on the school board. So, okay, so how many?
What grade?
This is for 6th, 7th, and 8th grade reading.
Oh, wow.
Formative years.
Very formative. So I'm reading this to Georgia, and I'm thinking this narrative is not accurate. In fact, it feels like it's got a lot of like propaganda-ish things in there. Do you know what I mean? That I'm going to have to like say to Georgia, this is my daughter who's 11. Oh no, this isn't really the way it is. There's another side to this story. You have to look at it from sort of different angles. Let me tell you some history and give you some context. But the story in this, you're very sympathetic to this little girl who is a Palestinian girl, and you're sympathetic to her story and her plight and how she's afraid. And do you know what I'm saying? So I just,
you're right.
I think it's again, interesting and concerning.
I think it's very concerning. And again, having been raised and seeing two dictators, and it's the same story, and I'll repeat it like a broken record, because I see the signs that I saw there, you know, in terms of indoctrination, the propaganda. Is what you're talking about. And too many great men and women throughout history, not just in America, but all throughout the world, have stated, you know, strong countries get destroyed from within. And that's how you get destroyed. There was a Jewish, I don't know if he was a podcaster, radio, or television guy, but he went into Gaza. And he said he was an Italian journalist. Of course, because they would have killed him had they known he was Jewish. And pretty much didn't matter what age, from the young kids to the elderly, they were spitting on Jews. Kill them. We don't want them. They're dirt. They're vile. They need to be wiped off the face of the earth. This is stuff, and this isn't the first time. I remember 30-some-odd years ago watching a 60 Minutes episode of a young girl, 5 years old. Just you would think she was a sailor, how vile she was talking about Jewish people. And it's one-sided. Look. Israel's not innocent. I mean, I should look at the 1960s. Big John, our producer, can help us out with the ship incident, you know, that they had. They never answered for that, for killing our service members on that boat. So they're not saints. I have seen a couple of videos, films on it, and they can be brutal. But when you've been persecuted by every Middle East nation, especially the Six-Day War from the 60s, you know, you kind of look at your surrounding area and you kind of keep your guard up. So Jamie, this ceasefire has three phases, each lasting 42 days. The first phase obviously focuses on the release of some of the hostages, the partial troop withdrawal. The second phase sees negotiations of the remaining hostages, and the third phase focuses on reconstruction. I guess my question to you is, do you see us making it through that phase? Or, I mean, where can things go wrong? For example, I believe the third phase, a lot of that reconstruction money's going to wind up rebuilding those tunnels and taking the materials that are used for infrastructure. And as they always do, use them to build foundations for their weapons, et cetera. How do you see those three phases?
Yeah, peace is going to be fragile during this, you know, 126-day period or whatever it is. There will what can go wrong? It's probably easier to ask what couldn't go wrong. I mean, it's just a fragile diplomatic and military space, and the reconstruction, I agree with you. Like, it's, you know, what's the, you know, how do we know that the money is going to those who have been most, the citizens who have been most impacted by these two warring factions? And so not warring country and a faction. And so I'm encouraged that they're going to move forward. I'm encouraged that Donald Trump's going to oversee it. Marco Rubio, my friend, is going to be Secretary of State during this time. So I feel confident that we can get there. I'm just, you know, there's a lot of pitfalls between here and there.
I understand. I agree. So I want to keep this moving, guys. We got three more.
Can I ask a question about that? Sure. I don't remember seeing in that who's actually going to be paying for the reconstruction. Has that been made clear yet?
The United States of America, as we always do. I'm speculating, but at the end of the day, we pretty much look. The downside with Israel, and we need to keep Israel in check more than we do, is because we fund them by billions of dollars every year. I'm sorry, Israelis hate hearing this. Without the United States, you will cease to exist. You don't have the materials to build your own weapons. We fund Israel more than most people understand or could ever imagine. So my thought process is we're probably going to foot the bulk of this. Israel can say, we're paying, but where's your money come from?
It's probably technically the United Nations would be my guess.
And Jamie, we fund about 70% of the United Nations.
I'm not disagreeing with you there. I'm just saying the letters on the side of the trucks.
Yeah.
Probably
U.S. Let me close this out, but let me make a comment about United Nations. More than one tunnel was discovered less than a few hundred feet from United Nations outposts, which leads you to believe the United Nations knew what Hamas was doing and did nothing. The United Nations is very anti-Semitic towards Israel. They're always condemning Israel. They're always throwing the book at Israel. Let me put it this way. I can't remember if it was Iran or Iraq, but when they sat on the Humane Council, you know, for atrocities, I'm like, that in and of itself says everything about the United Nations. Let me close this out. But one thing I did want to mention is some of the prisoners who will be released have been arrested more than once for crimes. So if there's no way we should have conceded that point, and the fact that we did really pisses me off. So let's wrap up this so-called peace deal, and let's not forget that while hostages will supposedly return to their families in a timely manner, Hamas is handed the keys to continue their reign of terror down the road. Thanks to their political maneuvering, we've ensured that the next generation of American targeting terrorists might just be walking free today. So cheers to another round of diplomacy where peace seems to mean preparing for the next war. Bravo, Biden, for playing into Hamas's hands yet again. Peace out. All right, let's move on to Dementia Joe's oligarch warning, the pot calling the kettle black. Now, before we even start this discussion, Jamie is our GOP strategist. He's been around since when, the 1800s, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
What is your thought, real quick, on oligarchs and the billionaires? Just, you know, a quick summation on your thoughts on billionaires controlling the both parties from when you started politics to where it's at today before we get deep into this.
Sure. The biggest decision that happened, right or wrong, whether we should change it or not, probably up for discussion, but the biggest decision that's happened during my career is the Citizens United U.S. Supreme Court case,
yeah,
which allows corporations to act as citizens, especially with political activity. So I won't delve into that case much more than that, but what it allows is for every rich person in every single community to set up a political committee versus working with, when I first started, you rich people gave money to the party. And while if you were to poll political parties, it would probably poll lower than lawyers, right? And so, the political parties aren't necessarily, everybody thinks, daisies and daffodils when they think of political parties. However, the one thing that political parties did, and I think the Citizens United case did, was started this modern polarization of our politics today. And the reason why is the money is each rich person. This happens in your own community with a developer or with whatever. Whoever's the rich person in your community can set up their own political party and they make donations. They don't even have to run the money through political campaigns anymore.
Right.
So if they want, Annette elected, they can run a complete campaign for or against Annette without her or her opponent's knowledge or approval. And, so it's kind of been a slippery slope. I think we're getting to a point where people are starting, even politicians are looking at it and saying, where is too far? And I think we'll see that rein back in. But, I hope that, certainly the infrastructure of political parties crumbling has not been helpful. And that's what we've seen in both parties at all levels.
Right. That's a great point. I always forget about Citizens United. Annette, you and I were children. Well, not children, but we were probably in our teenage years. And I remember seeing that decision coming on CBS News. And I want to say with Dan Rather is who it was. And, being a conservative, I was like, oh, yeah, Republicans are for, so it must be good. Not realizing until I got involved in 2015 in politics, realizing how devastating it is. And sitting on the planning group, you quickly learn how powerful those PACs are with the developers, always looking to build, Joe Biden in his farewell address, if you could understand him, gave a stark warning about the concentration of power among tech billionaires, Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, and Jeff Bezos. They are evil people, evil. And I'm like, what the hell? And I'm like, thank God for X, because I'm like, to push back on you, Jamie, a little bit, I don't think politicians are raising their eyebrows. I think Democrats are pissed that Republicans are harnessing their own billionaires now. And I don't even think it's that as much as the power of Elon Musk and X. I mean, that's just a game changer. So, I mean, excuse me. There's for influence over policy. These are their billionaires, Democrat billionaires, George Soros, funding progressive DAs, the media, Michael Bloomberg, Lorraine Powell Jobes, you know, has the Emerson Collective, which is social justice. Reid Hoffman. I'm sure, Jamie, you recognize a lot of these names. Regulatory influence. Mark Lazary, electoral impact. Tom Steyer, wealth redistribution and climate. Reid Hoffman, tech. Haim Saban, global influence. We're not going to cover all of them, but I wanted to say those things so the audience understood. You may sit there and look at, oh, those three billionaires, but man, that's just the tip of the iceberg for the Democrats. And what people don't realize, maybe Jamie, I don't know, was it a couple, maybe a generation ago, but the flip happened. All the Wall Street began funding and promoting Democrat agendas, including the Chamber of Commerce. And the Republican Party has, ironically enough, become the party of the working class, the, quote, uneducated working class worker. The media loves to sit there and put the uneducated white supremacist working class is how they like to put it, not realizing there's a lot of blacks and Latinos who are in that working class. So first of all, let's talk. See, I'm already going on a rant here. It just drives me up a wall. Let's talk about George Soros. Annette and I have firsthand experience with him via L.A. here. He failed in San Diego. He supported the opponent of the current D.A., but the current D.A., she was just so popular, you know, he pulled his money back. But we saw George Soros with Jorge Gascon and the damage he did. Annette, your thoughts on this hypocrisy of these three tech billionaires are going to control America versus what we've already seen from somebody like Soros?
Well, I think we're playing the same game, just that right now we like the people that are winning. You know what I'm saying? They sort of are doing the same thing, and I can tell you that only because if I'm looking at feeds that I look at, people that are really upset by like Elon Musk and what they think is Mark Zuckerberg sort of changing sides, you know what I mean? People that are upset by that, I mean, they're just, you know, they had it their way, and now they're upset that it feels like the pendulum is swinging our way. But it's the same thing. I honestly have to be honest with you. I'm happy with someone like an Elon Musk who can come in there and do what he did with Twitter. I'm relieved and grateful for that freedom of speech as a citizen. But I gotta say, I don't like any of it. You know what I mean? Even if it is the stuff that I agree with and I support.
I think what you're saying is, I'm the same way in it. It's like, you defeat the enemy, you fight fire with fire. We may not like the bigger picture, but we understand the tools of war. And y'all have your billionaires. We got the biggest billionaire in the world now, you know. Jamie, George, Jorge Gascon, Alvin Bragg, Kim Fox, Krasner, Jesse Bowden, Kim Gardner, Marilyn Mosby, Paul Torres, Raul Torres. These are DAs in major metropolitan, not cities, but metropolitan areas. And crime is rampant. What say you on the billionaire George Gascon?
Well, and you missed the two, including Andrew Warren from Tampa, just north, about 60 miles north of me in Sarasota, Florida. And Ron DeSantis removed two right. George Soros-backed DAs just in the last 12 to 14 months. And both of them ran for reelection. One of them won, and the other lost. And so there's a big, you know, question mark of whether or not that this DA over in Orlando will continue to have her job, because they've literally said, we're not going to prosecute. You know, we're going to determine who we're going to prosecute and who we're not. And we're not applying, you know, the law equally to all people, and which is a basic constitutional right for all of us. And so Ron DeSantis said, you put your hand on whatever Bible that you chose for your swearing in, and said you would uphold the Constitution. You're not doing it. And he removed them from office. So So, and Florida's better for it. And
I agree.
The law is applied more equally now than it was before. And so it's an unfortunate circumstance, and not sure how those voters in Orlando decided to reelect her. But my guess is Ron DeSantis will allow her to take office and be in that job until she decides to thumb her nose at the Constitution once again, which I think is inevitable, but I think that's probably the proper way to handle it.
You know, that's a good point. People, you know, I look at Ron DeSantis, and even if he was a Democrat, I'd be rooting for him because he's actually fighting for the people. And people love to look at the world in black and white. Well, he's done this, he's done that. Look, the world is not black and white. People are human. They have loyalties. They have responsibilities. We don't believe in the 80-20 rule anymore. It's like 100% with us or you're not with us. And I think Ron DeSantis actually maintains that fine line. So let's, you know, and the reason I didn't mention those is because of Ron DeSantis. I just researched the ones that are still in power outside of Boating, who was recalled, you know. So let's move on to Michael Bloomberg.
Can I say something about George Soros really quickly? Because when I was on the trading floor, he was behind a lot of activity in the markets and moving markets. I used to think just that if there was anyone I thought was truly sort of like an evil presence in this world, I felt like it was him. Felt like he was so highly manipulated. And I was really young then, and I would see the things that were happening behind the scenes, that he was sort of like moving the chessboard and how he was moving it. And I always was like, he's a chilling figure to me.
Hey, that's a good point. I always tell people the world is not black and white. We don't have free markets. You know, they're always manipulated through the government control, regulations, whatever, you know. And he was a master of that, using the various tools. And I don't say God bless him. I'll never say that to him. But I admire his ingenuity. You can admire your enemy's tactics and how they use it and learn from it. And we can learn it. But what irks me is his son. I just wanted – in the military, in the Navy, we had something called a dry room. I volunteered to go to a dry room once to take care of business. You know, it was being phased out when I entered. It was, you know, what a dry room is you and somebody else go into a room and you take care of business the old-fashioned way. When I see his son, I just want to take him into a dry room and pound the hell out of him, you know, give him the beating nobody ever gave him. Because I'm like, you've earned nothing, you've done nothing, and here you are, you're going to change the world in a negative manner. So, Annette, let's talk about Michael Bloomberg. So to the audience, I have 5 guns, and they all scare the hell out of me. I know how to shoot them. I go out a few times a year, practice, but guns scare the hell out of me. But I am a staunch Second Amendment. Again, being raised in Panama, the 2 dictators I saw took all the guns. There was no opposition, you know? Michael Bloomberg, and he really pushes this along with all Democrats, the assault weapon. There is no gun that you can look at and say, that's an assault weapon. It's a purposely created vague term by the New York Times, and it's used. And the worst part is that Michael Bloomberg put tens of millions of dollars to sit there and say, well, that military-looking rifle there is a danger. And they've said that about guns that are nothing but 22, the weakest gun, you know, smallest bullet around. Your thoughts on their billionaires trying to take our constitutional rights away?
I mean, guns are intended to be lethal, right?
Correct.
I'm like you. I'm very afraid of guns. And I only one time went to one of those ranges and I thought it was going to be like a good shot. No, I was not. I didn't want to be in there because other people were shooting guns. I'm like, someone could just turn and shoot me and I would be gone. Here's the thing that scares me about people taking away people's right to bear arms is that the reason why that's there is a protection against our government. And sometimes, honestly, when I see pictures of like SWAT teams going into the streets and like tear gassing people, I'm like, I'm sort of glad we have the right to bear arms. You know what I mean? If we didn't, the government could at any point in time decide we own you. You know what I mean? And there's not a damn thing you can do about it.
Right.
So I have to still stand up for the right to bear arms for that reason. The government, I don't have, you know, trust and faith in any government, honestly, even one that has Trump at the helm. I think people can power.
I agree. Even Elon Musk, I worry about him abusing his power. You know, and again, I go back to my country of Panama where they took the guns, you know. And I guess I shouldn't say I fear guns. I just have an uber amount of respect. And the final note before I get your final comments on this, Jamie, is television has done a disservice to the reality of guns.
Yes.
You know, it's like you get the moron. Why didn't you shoot him in the leg? Really? You're taught to shoot body mass because it's only in the – it's like, you know, you see in the movies, it's like they're all contorted like pretzels and making the shot, banking it right, left, right. And people think, oh, it's pretty easy. Like you said in that, you thought, hey, I'll go there, point, shoot, and I'll be a good shot. No. My wife is a better shot than I am. That's embarrassing, you know. So, Jamie.
Well, if you shoot them in the leg, they get to shoot back. And
yeah, you know what, Jamie? A big man, a 9mm, today's 9mm bullets can take out a big guy, but back in, but not all of them, a hollow point probably can. But back in the day, a 9mm, you know, a guy drugged out on PCP, angel dust, or whatever, you know, a 9mm couldn't necessarily, they'd still be walking at you.
And Democrats have started using, you know, this term weapons of war, right? Instead of assault weapons or, you know, and the truth of the matter is, and I actually have video on my YouTube at Reasonable Arguments about, I was in New Orleans and a guy runs up to my fence, jumps over my back fence and it's running through my yard. And he fortunately, we call the police, they come and look, make sure he didn't get in the house, breach the house. And, he was running from something, but you know, just that previous Saturday night, we were in New Orleans at a Christmas party, but the previous Saturday night, me and my wife at that very time were sitting around our fire in our backyard. And so we would have had a stranger running through our backyard. And I like to say that, yes, citizens need weapons of war. And you're seeing this in California right now with the wildfires, because at some point the war is in your driveway. And when the war is in your driveway, there's no one to protect you. After a hurricane, there's not enough police to protect you. After what Southern California is seeing with wildfires, there are not enough police to protect you. You are on your own in those situations. And the only thing you have to protect you and your family is what you already have at your disposal. And if you don't have a gun at your disposal during those times, and, you know, one evening our camera went off in our driveway, 3 a.m. There's 3 people in our driveway trying to get on our car door, you know, and you want to go out and you're like, hey, I'm going to go protect my land. Now, me and my wife have decided we're going to protect the inside of our house. If somebody's outside of our house, they're going to do what they want. But if they're inside, they start to broach our house, then they're going to feel the what they deserve. But the interesting thing here is the camera caught 3 people. And as they walked away, they didn't get in the car. As they walked away, 3 13-year-old kids, you know, who one of them got caught, belonged to a gang. And about 25 yards behind, a 4th person comes out of the bushes and crosses the driveway. So you might think, even with cameras, that you have 2 or 3 people, and there may be more lurking. These are sophisticated criminals, even at 12, 13 years old, who know that they need to have their back protected. And so you go out and start waving a gun in your driveway, you can count that there's somebody who you cannot see who's waving one back.
Right.
And so, you know, I encourage people to get weapons of war. Because also, even if you have a 9mm that holds, 13 rounds, if all 3 of those people have 13 rounds, what you have is a math problem.
Right.
You have 39
right.
bullets incoming versus possibly 13 outgoing. And, you know, I don't like those odds. And then you take the 4th person over in the shadows and you start saying, okay, now there's 50 bullets to 13. You have to be pretty darn accurate in the middle of the night, shaking, shooting at a human being. You know, so the only chance you have is to have more bullets than they have, and get those criminals running away from you.
Right, and they will. They will. You usually fire one shot, and that's all it takes. I always tell people, get a shotgun. It's a wide range. It's shorter, but you know the odds of missing with a regular gun versus shotgun.
You're gonna hit them, but they're gonna, if they have a gun, they're gonna be able to shoot back. Right. So well, you know, and I'm not gonna get in the middle of all that, but I just encourage people. You know, when we're talking about the 30,000 foot view of whether citizens should be allowed to have weapons of war, the answer is absolutely yes, because with what Biden has done with 20 million illegals coming into our country, sooner or later, the war is going to be in your driveway.
Right, and that's already happened to me here. We had an incident here at my home. But the crux of this matter is the billionaire class and the presence of wealthy influencers in politics. But the crux of the problem here is the double standards. Democrats want you to believe we don't have billionaires when they have most of America's billionaires in their corner because of whether it's the Chamber of Commerce and the billionaires that help that are aligned on business interests, to those who want to take our constitutional rights away, to those who want to promote anarchy via these DAs. So, you know, the Democrat Party's deep connections with these behemoths, it reveals a lot about how they treat us, how they view us as constituents. They think we're stupid. They think that we're going to believe what they say. Thank goodness for X. So with that, people, understand Biden's just talking out of his tush again, which is pretty much where he's been at his whole life. But that the billionaire class is firmly entrenched in the Democrats. But fear the ones on our side, too, because power corrupts and abuse comes through various channels politically. So let's move on, people. Let's quickly talk about, there's not a lot to talk about. ActBlue has Gavin Newsom, but the guy's taking a deserved beating, and he's just scrambling. And then he puts his foot in his mouth again saying, hey, I set up a site where you can donate, and it's ActBlue. ActBlue takes a cut of everything. They have not said they're not going to take a cut. They're saying that they're donating to giving the money to where it's needed most. And that can be true. But the problem I have is ActBlue, I'm a marketer. This is marketing 101. They're going to capture your information, capture your credit card. They're going to do a lot of capturing. And ActBlue is under investigation for taking people's names, titles, and their credit cards and charging them illegally monthly. They are under investigation by various state attorneys. I believe this is what Newsom's goal was. We're going to do it through ActBlue. We'll give what they donate to the charities, but we're going to capture their information, and our dastardly deeds that we are known for will continue with these new donors. Annette, your thoughts?
Wait. Go back. Are we talking about ActBlue based on with what's happening, people donating for what's happening with the wildfires?
Yes. Gavin Newsom set up a website, and it's through ActBlue.
That's a horrible way of looking at it, though.
Oh, but it's a realistic way based off of history, you know, of what ActBlue is under investigation for those exactly what I've said, using people's credit cards, charging them $5 a month.
Yeah, but William, everybody does that.
No.
I think the difference here, Annette, is that ActBlue is a Democrat organization that funds Democrat candidates and causes. So when you start running what people think is nonprofit donations to victims of wildfires, and that 20% service fee or whatever that service fee, 3%, 20%, whatever that service fee is going to an organization that is set up specifically to support Democrat candidates and causes, and you have the governor of a state who's saying, oh, we need to, you know, help our fellow citizens, and the service fee is going towards a Democrat organization, you might as well call it the Democrat National Committee. There's a fundamental problem with that issue. I think that's where William's trying to get to.
Right. You know, you're right. And to my producer, Big John, who has TDS beyond TDS, you're right. Republicans do it too, but not at the level that Democrats do it with ActBlue. And two, to my producer, I've always said it's wrong. The difference between me and libertarians is I don't view it as black and white. I know that shit happens on both sides, and I admit it. You know, so if this happened with WinRed, which is still – WinRed's fairly new in contrast to ActBlue in terms of how long it's been around, how well it's run, how well it's organized. But to use wildfires. That's as low as it gets.
That's disgraceful. That's right.
I will interject here. There's one thing I think that, you know, you having a lot of viewers and subscribers in Southern California, you need to look at. And I can tell you from what happened here in Florida with the hurricanes this past year and with the eye of the storm coming within a mile of my house, Milton coming within a mile of my house and my house having 135, 140 mile an hour winds on it. You know, the one thing the Biden administration did and set a precedent for was not giving money to the state of Florida to deal with emergency recovery. What they ended up doing is they ended up divvying up the federal money and giving it directly to counties. And those county commissions then decided what they're going to do with the money within the parameters of, you know, during one of the storms, it's everything from water quality all the way up to potentially worker training. So they spent almost 10%, a little bit, maybe a little bit more, 15% of their hurricane recovery money on training truck drivers and air conditioning techs, because it's like, oh, we need these folks in our workforce to help us recover. And so it's kind of narrow of what the county can spend money on. It's broader than you think. You know, it's not just going back and rebuilding homes, but I think you're going to see the same thing in California. Gavin Newsom today called on Congress to act immediately to send the state of California a package of money. And I think you're going to see Donald Trump say, you know what, we're not sending it to you, Gavin Newsom, for you to have a slush fund and run around the state of California and waste federal dollars. We're going to give it directly to the counties that were impacted and let those elected officials decide where the money goes. So
I don't even think they should do that. I think the federal government needs to come in and take over. These are all democratically run. And here's my other issue with that. Go take care of Hawaii and North Carolina and Tennessee before you even look at California, because there are still people homeless. There are still people struggling. But they want to take care of
it. Big enough to take care of all of it. So I don't think we should put one struggling American in front of another. But, these are people who are impacted by something that was not a cause of their own. And we as Americans should stand beside our fellow Americans and help them recover. But you're right. The fact that, you know, here in Florida, even they caught FEMA workers skipping people who had Trump signs in their yard. Who would have qualified, and they go door to door and say, oh, you know, we want to make sure you're getting as much money as possible. And they skip those with Trump signs in their yard, denying them their federal recovery. And so that's what we've seen from this past administration. So this is all going to change on Monday. I think you're going to see something different happen in California. Gavin Newsom's not going to get a huge check.
Right. But to your point, Jamie, there may be enough money, but there's not enough manpower, enough departments to get it all working. Our government's so dysfunctional, they've already abandoned some of these people. And it's easy to forget about, you're not hearing much about, hey, there are still people homeless. Everything's about, we got to get all the money to California. And I'm like, as a Californian, Nanette and I can tell you, half the shit that happened shouldn't have happened. And now it's your classic education problem. Throwing more money at it does not fix it. We have money. What did we do with $50 million? Put it up in the anti-Trump fund when that money could go to these victims. So that's what I'm talking about. And that's where Trump can step in and go, no, no, no. Let's check what your coffers show right now and what you can do before we put one dime of federal money. And by the way, we're going to take care of these other states as well.
No, that's a point. A very good point you made, William, is that those other tragedies happened quite a long time ago, and people forget. They have very short memories. They're on to the next big sensational sort of tragedy that happens. Meanwhile, someone's life has been completely uprooted and, you know, destroyed in every way, and they're starting basically from scratch over, and like, oh, that's yesterday's news. Now there's the fires in California. And then these people too will still be struggling and trying to figure out and put their life back together and be on to the next thing. I do get upset that sometimes we do forget about.
Well, I do. I get upset at that we're screwing the poor guy living in the mountains over. Yeah. I'm sorry for some people who have voted for this. We voted for all this tragedy. We voted for people. You need to understand that. We voted for censorship. But my point is, the whole swath of LA is as blue as it comes. And nobody deserved what happened, but look in the freaking mirror at what you voted for and the results of what that vote caused. It caused empty reservoirs. It caused water not being able to get through the hydrants. It caused less firemen. It caused unqualified, and I'm sorry, women to be firemen who can't sit there and pick a man up and drag him. Citizens were the ones who were the most helpful towards one another. And in defense of LA, that's everywhere. You know, you see the citizens. And unlike that firewoman who sat there and said, you know, people want somebody who looks like them. I've been in dangerous situations. I don't care if it's a brother, if it's a fellow Latino, it's a white guy, Asian guy. If you're there to help, my arms are open. That's the life I was brought up in, the family I was brought up in. So when I hear bigots like that woman speak like that, see, y'all got me on a rant. I apologize to the audience. Let us move on here. The controversy.
It was a darn good rant, though, William.
It was good. You're on a roll.
So the controversy here is the use of Act Blue for wildfire relief donation. It underscores the broader debate of the negative side of politics and charity. There's always an ulterior motive. No political organization should be involved with taking money, and because that's not their job. There are charities built for this that can do a better job and distributing the money much more efficiently, because government, we know, can't distribute squat. All right, guys, we're running out of time here a little bit here. So I just want to touch on the Democrats' bold stand against protecting women, H.R. 30. So H.R. 30, the Violence Against Women by Illegal Aliens Act. And, you know, I'm kind of tired of more laws and more laws. But at the end of the day, it seems like we have no choice but to create certain laws to combat politicians who have run amok. Now, this law did pass the House, and it was really pushed hard by Nancy Mace, who is a rape survivor. And I'm looking for my numbers here. Did I accidentally delete my numbers? Here we go. It passed total votes 419 in favor, 274 against 145 Democrats are okay, in my opinion, with women being raped by illegals. The Lake and Riley incident, it doesn't do anything because they look at the bigger picture. We got to get our future voting base over the border. Annette, you're a woman. I'm sure you have probably some opinions on this thought. Now, and maybe I'm being too harsh. They criticized the bill as being more political than substantive policy, and it doesn't address core immigration issues. My take is I don't care about the core immigration issues. I care about protecting vulnerable people in this country. Your thoughts?
No, that's right. And I'm a woman and I have five daughters. And that's like a real fear, maybe even with me, more with them, because they're out and about in the cities. You know what I mean? And I'm really not out and about that way anymore. But I think it's a start. I don't think it's that, I agree, it's not that comprehensive, and I think it's a start.
I agree. I think it's a start. Bill, I'm sorry, Jamie. Bill, I think.
My husband.
Bill always reminds me. I have five daughters, William, because when we do our podcast, that's what I was thinking of. Bill Ross, Jamie. Why would 145 Democrats vote? Is there a legitimate reason?
It goes to show you, back to your comment, William, why we have to pass laws. We have to pass laws when common sense fails. And when you have this many number, almost a third of Congress, not willing to stand up for women and children who are being raped and tortured by illegal immigrants, there's something fundamentally wrong with the Democratic Party. And there's something fundamentally wrong with those 142 or 152, whatever the number was, of Democrats who voted against this law for pure political reasons instead of standing up for women and children. I mean, we'd be hard-pressed to find a time in our American history where we've had such a group of people turn their backs on women and children. It's disgusting.
Yeah, but Jamie, wouldn't you say that it happens again and again? We care more about politics than people? That is just, what did we just say about exploiting the people in the fires by saying, taking the good heartedness of human beings who want to help other human beings and then extorting them, basically. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's unbelievable the things that we talk about, but we're basically saying it happens again and again and again.
And what we don't realize, and again, I know this firsthand from family experience, in most other countries, rape is so much more prevalent than it is. So as bad as we are, we still have one of the best systems in place to protect women, but it seems to be deteriorating because I truly believe we are creating the class, the working class and the elitist class. There's a growing separation in terms of people who live in their ivory towers and simply don't care. And we saw that with going back to Soros when Chesa Boudin was recalled and they broke out because technology allows us to see where all the votes come from. All the protected and away from the crime area, white rich districts all voted to not recall him. All the working class, all the poor districts, everywhere where the crime was rampant, and they were mostly Democrats, they all voted him out. So we have this caste system where there's a protected class versus the working class. And again, you see that a lot in third world countries in terms of rape and abuse. And so we can't deteriorate to become one of those nations that we're trying so much to stay ahead of in terms of how we treat our women. And I don't know what's going to stop it. Maybe, who knows? But real quick,
we have to at some point get to a conversation where we do talk about what can stop it, because that's got to be part of the fabric of our system, has to be values.
I tell you what will stop it. That Smith and Wesson will stop it.
We certainly can't put up with George Soros prosecutors not prosecuting these crimes on political reasons. I mean, so you've tied this show really well together, William, because, you know, whether it's Act Blue, you know, this is an issue that just shows your viewers how all of these issues touch one thing.
And it's the
decay of values within the Democratic Party and the decay of American values within the Democratic Party. Each and every one of these issues, whether it was Israel, whether it's Act Blue, whether it's the rape and of with illegal immigrants, all of it has to do with the decaying of American values among the Democratic Party. And the only way they're going to fix it is for us to vote them out and say, just like we did in 2024, enough is enough. We are going to stand for women. We're going to stand for children. We're not going to allow boys in girls' bathrooms. We're not going to let men in women's prisons. You know, we're no longer going to stand with this. And that's, I think, the crux of what is happening here in America today. So you've done a great job tying this all together.
Okay. Thank you. And real quick to my producer, Big John, the reason I got upset with the Act Blue, I worked at the Alzheimer's Association. The Alzheimer's is an epidemic. Baby boomers, it's an underfunded, I forget what the national NHS or whatever, it's like we give $4 billion a year for Alzheimer's research and we still give like $50 billion for breast cancer. Not that I'm against breast cancer, I'm for breast cancer as much as we pretty much lick breast cancer with, you know, in terms of how to treat it, how to keep people, talk to women about, hey, this is what you can do, etc. And we don't, so when I worked at the Alzheimer's Association, the money that was donated to us, our national would take it. They said, no, the bylaws, that money comes to us. And people were donating that money to help our chapter specifically, to help caregivers. So we finally came to an agreement. And it just irks me how these big corporate behemoths, or whether it's political or corporate, they take the money. And a lot of it goes to six-figure salaries at these corporate nationals, whether it's Red Cross or the Alzheimer's Association. And they've come down since they were exposed about 10 or 15 years ago. But Red Cross, she was some of those four to five of the biggest ones. Their salaries and CEOs were like $800,000, $700,000 for charity work. You know, so it's always been a sore point. And I always tell people, do not give money. Drive up to L.A. and give your time to help clear out a neighborhood, because 60% of that money you donate will be wasted. They will appreciate your manpower helping them clean up the neighborhood. That goes much farther than them having to wait years for money to come in. And that's what I mean by the community helping one another. All right, guys, let's get to what is going to be my favorite topic eventually. And that is fired up hot takes. They're designed for the audience to be yes or no questions with one to two sentence statements to back them up. No exceptions this week. Let's stick to it. So I got five questions I want to get off. And where's our producer, Big John? There he is. I always like Big John to join us with his libertarian take. And Big John, I apologize. I didn't mean to jump all over you. Served it.
Okay. I guess I always do.
Okay, so if we go through these five questions real quick, I want to keep moving to get the top 10 here. So let's start it out. We'll start it out with Big John, the Supreme Court, and TikTok. Should the Supreme Court have stepped in to save and protect TikTok?
Yes.
Outstanding. Annette?
Yes.
Jamie?
Absolutely. Yes, they definitely should stop TikTok.
All right, and you guys can give a 1 to 2 sentence. You know, if it's yes or no.
By the way, my yes was they should have intervened to prevent the banning of TikTok. That's what my yes was. There you go. Okay, I just wanted to make sure Jamie and I were on the opposite side of the fence.
I thought we were too. That's what I was trying to clarify.
Okay. My take is, this is depressing because we shouldn't have the government interfering with private businesses, but because it's Chinese owned and the world's global, there are dangers too. So I don't know. Should there be an investigation into the California Governor Gavin Newsom's Act Blue stunt, Jamie?
Yes. The money should not go to political organizations for charitable donations.
Jamie. I'm sorry, Annette. You look so alike.
Oh, thank you.
I think I agree with Jamie, but I mean, is they going to slap his hand? Is there going to be any sort of consequence? I don't know. Yeah, I guess they could look into it. Will it come to anything?
Who knows? Big God.
No, they shouldn't investigate it.
I believe it should only be a yes, but only to make sure that there's no abuse of the names and people who have donated as they have, as about 10 AGs are currently investigating for past practices. Will California learn from their mistake and get companies to provide fire insurance to its constituents? And I apologize to the audience. California, about 60% of Californians no longer have fire insurance because there's a cap on it and they're losing money, so they are pulling out of the state. So let me repeat that. Will California learn from their mistake and get companies to provide fire insurance to its constituents in a normal capitalistic way? Annette?
No, I doubt it. I haven't seen California learn from their mistakes since I've been here.
Big John?
No, all insurance should be deregulated and not bound to the state at all. So they're not going to do that, and they may change the law to raise the caps, but that's just plugging your finger in the dike. So no, they're not going to learn from their mistakes.
I agree with John, except for maybe we allow insurance companies to bundle likely tragedies. So all the fire states could then cross state lines. You know, the Gulf states could all, you know, every Gulf state's not going to get hit by a hurricane every year. So could insurance companies provide insurance for all Gulf states, as long as they provide for all of them? You know, they provide for everybody in that area and then help mitigate the disasters when they show up.
I say they will actually learn this go round. We're talking tens of billions, and we don't have the coffers, and the federal government with Trump will probably slow down the money that the feds give California, and the Democrats are the only ones to bear the brunt, so they're going to loosen it up, and hopefully that'll be for the better. Are Meghan Markle and Prince Harry using the LA fires for photo ops? Let's start with the beautiful Annette on this one.
Yeah, because they don't know any other way of doing anything. Yes.
Big John.
I refuse to give an answer in as much if I do, it'll show that I have any interest at all in those two. So I abstain.
That sounds like a yes to me, that there's photo op. Jamie?
The answer is yes. I'm not sure that it's necessarily bad that they are.
I agree. I believe I think it's all bad. It's all putting the tension on them. They don't know squat. They're not ready. It's get out of our country, you damn. All right, I'm going to skip number 5 because I'm not sure you guys are aware what happened that came out today. Number 6, is Joe Biden done with pardons, or will there be more on his final day? John.
That's a good question. If he was smart, he would pardon like some political things, like he should free Ross Ulbricht probably. Just to steal Trump's thunder.
Yeah, yeah.
But I doubt he will. So I'll say no.
Annette.
I sort of think he's done too. I don't see any more coming.
Jamie.
I don't think you pardon or commute the sentences of 2,500 people on a Thursday or Friday unless you have more and worse coming.
You know, I feel terrible because I know the answer. History has shown literally every president on their final day leaves office with a bunch of pardons sitting on his desk going through. So I will say yes. Here's one. We'll start with Big John because I know what his answer is, but I agree with his answer on this one. Is the ERF, the External Revenue Service, to collect tariffs, duties, and foreign source revenues a good idea?
Oh, God, no. No.
Come on, give us a libertarian take real quick.
Well, listen, I was promised a libertarian leaning Trump, and instead of getting rid of the IRS, which would have been the correct thing to do, I now have two tax collection agencies to worry about, potentially, the IRS and the ERS. Yeah, tariffs are bad. Having an agency set up to collect a bad tariff is a bad idea for a bad idea, so it's bad all the way around.
Annette.
I totally agree with John on this one, 100%. He said it perfectly.
Thank you, Annette.
You're welcome.
I think targeted tariffs can be a positive influence, and but we don't need a new department to do it. It can be done by Treasury or any other. You know, we don't need the ERS.
I'm with Jamie. Targeted tariffs are great, targeted surgically, but we don't need another damn agency because what government agency has ever grown smaller? None. Well, we see a land grab by developers with Democrat help in Los Angeles to fulfill Gavin Newsom's LA 2.0 smart city. Annette.
Yes. I think that's going to happen. And I think it, yes. I think, yes.
Jamie.
Gavin Newsom scares the living hell out of me because he has said that he basically stripped Californians' right to private to their private property that burned down by saying that they cannot sell to developers. So, of course, the governor has a plan to collect all the land and create smart cities, live over work, you know, new urbanism. You're not going to be able to build your single-family home back. You know, why anybody would want to build in California is beyond me. Come to Florida where you can live free. The breath, you know, we have a nice beach. It's beautiful. You know, you have to put up with a hurricane, but you have like 10 days to figure out where you want to go on vacation when the hurricane hits.
So, Jamie, I don't mean to downplay a hurricane, but I would take a hurricane over a fire pretty much.
I would 100 times. 100 times I would.
Yeah.
No kidding.
That Florida promotion was brought to you from a produce stand. Big John, your thoughts.
Will there be a land grab? Listen, I learned at a very young age, there's only one thing on this planet that you can't make more of, and that's land. So every opportunity anyone ever has to grab land, they should grab it with both hands, borrow to get land and all that. Now, when the government does it, that's a bad thing. Government should own no land except for the buildings they actually work in. So, so will there be a land grab? Yes.
Yes.
Should there be by the government? No.
No. Yes, there will be a land grab, but I believe there will be pushback this go round. I think we're hitting a changing tide, but will it succeed? I don't know, but there will be a land grab. And Newsom's pretty much telegraphed it. Two more, people. Let's make these two real quick. CNN is shifting all its talent around in the hopes of surviving and getting better ratings. Is that the smart move, or should they just shutter other talent and start anew to try to regain the reputation? Jamie.
Well, I don't know. They probably need to keep some of them, but they need to become a news organization versus an entertainment organization. They've lost their way.
Annette.
Yeah, I think they do have some talent there. If they can just sort of get a different, you know, mission and vision, I think they could do it.
John.
Yeah, they're not going to get rid of all that infrastructure and everything. So, yeah, they're going to continue to retool it. Probably will probably too.
They will continue to retool it to their own dismal failures, and they've been retooling for the last 2.5-3 years because every talent on that show is uber leftist, and the audience sees them as uber leftist. So they need a complete fresh start to try to regain their name, and it's not going to happen until that happens.
Oh, so but, was that question a setup, William?
No. Okay, there you go. Fired up at 8 o'clock. CNN. Final question here. We'll start with Big John. Did Ron Rowe get a fair shake at Secret Service Director? He was Kim Cheadle's replacement after the Trump assassination. He is being phased out. A new Secret Service agent, Secret Service director is coming in. Big John.
I actually don't know if he got a fair shake or not, but in all fairness to the person I heartily despise, Donald Trump, would I want anybody associated with running the agency that almost got me killed? So, yeah, did he get a fair shake? I don't know. Do I begrudge him, to get rid of him and get one involved? Absolutely not, yeah.
Look at that. There is hope for humanity. A comment from Big John. Jamie.
He failed miserably. He didn't deserve to even have the job as long as he did. And so, he doesn't deserve a fair shake. I think he got a fair shake than he deserved.
Annette.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with both guys.
He did get a fair shake, and he should have been fired the moment he was in Congress a few days afterwards, stating that there was 100% Secret Service support at the first assassination attempt, only for the documentation to come out that he himself held back a lot of manpower from going to Butler, Pennsylvania. So he got a fair shake and should have been fired about that. And that's it, my friends. There we have it. Let's get a couple of plugs going around. Let's start with the homegrown podcast here with Big John and his new libertarian show.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So if everyone gets the chance, we have a weekly show with my new co-host, former VP of the Libertarian Party in 2024, Mike Termott. We do something called Liberty Lens, a short, maybe half hour every week. Catch that right here at Grumblings Media. And every Thursday night, catch me for Free For All, which is the libertarian version of this show with great guests and decidedly more correct opinions than I've been hearing on this show.
Yeah, there you go. And a teaser, we are going to start working with Miss Annette here on a possible show for her. And not to brush you aside, I just want to give the teaser, Annette, because you already pumped up your book there. But what's the name of the book? Again, real quick, and we're at, and you can get it at Amazon.com.
Yeah, Where Fairy Tales Go. A love story.
And to close it out, we have Mr. J.B. Miller, who will be joining us doing a featurette every week. And he will also be guest hosting at times, Fired Up.
I love it, Jamie. Yay!
What are your thoughts on the featurette? What do you hope to impart to our conservative audience?
You know, I just appreciate the discussion. You know, I think that everybody here has a great banner. And I always say there's 360 degrees of viewing an elephant. And especially when you throw Big John in here at the end, I think we cover most degrees than most conservative shows here. So you can find me at Reasonable Arguments on Substack and YouTube. You can find me everywhere else at RepJam, RepJam, on Twitter and every other social media, Instagram, Facebook, blah, blah, blah. So.
And there you have it, my friends. Thank you for tuning in. Before I forget, you can catch this podcast, Fired Up, as well as my culture, pop culture podcast, Red, White, and Rude, and my sports podcast, Points on the Board, at grumblingsmedia.com, as well as Rumble, YouTube, Pandora, Spotify, Apple. I am William Del Pilar for the Fired Up panel and crew, and until next week, we bid you adieu.